Hey folks, have you ever wanted to get started in real estate photography? Well, sit tight because in this interview, we're going to talk about how you can get started as a real estate photographer. This is TWIP. All right, folks. So one of the kind of unknown parts of commercial photography or photography where you actually generate revenue is real estate photography. Rich Baum is a real estate photographer based in the Sacramento area. He does this every single day. He is a professional at it and has made some stunning images that you probably would want made of your house. Rich has graciously donated his time today on this rainy Sacramento day to sit down and give us some, you know, one or two, maybe three really concise tips on how you can get started in real estate photography and actually maybe make a buck or two at it. Rich, welcome to the show, man. How's it going?
Well, thanks, Frederick. I'm a big fan of yours. I've been watching or listening to your podcast for years. And I appreciate you having me on.
You're welcome. Oh, so you're the one that's been listening. Okay, I understand.
there's three of us. There's three.
That's why I get three hits. You watch on your phone, your computer.
I usually do it twice, though, so I try and help. I'm a helper.
I love it. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on, man. This is good. So before we dive in, I'm really excited about this because, you know, honestly, I considered doing this type of photography, but have always shied away from it because of the reasons I'm going to, like, draw out of your brain during this conversation, basically these questions. So, yeah, a little bit. We'll extract them surgically from your brain. Okay, so give me some background on you. Like, how did you get started in this line of work, and what makes you want to hang out the shingle of real estate photographer?
Well, I come from a background in the motion picture industry. It's funny because I only shoot still images now, and I purposely don't like to do video, but I did moving pictures as a union prop master for 35 years in LA. Mm-hmm. I'm in the local 44 union. And I eventually met my wife, moved up to Northern California. And I was commuting back and forth for a couple of years. And when my kids started growing up, I said, I can't do this anymore. So I had to find a revenue source and, you know, I tried a bunch of things and nothing was really sticking or nothing I enjoyed. Then I got my first serious DSLR. I've been shooting photography since 1968, a long time.
Wow.
And all over the world. And I got my first DSLR. I think it was a Nikon D80. And I started shooting and then I started posting to Facebook and places, and people replied with, your photos are amazing. Yeah. Well, don't ever listen when people said they were amazing because they really were probably crappy. But yeah. I started really getting into it and I wanted to make a living. So I wanted to transition into it. So I started shooting everything I could shoot, learning everything about photography. I was shooting weddings. I was shooting professional sports, running races, portraits, seniors, you name it. And then I started also always love shooting buildings and always love shooting architecture around the world and working on movies in India. I did just photography forever.
That's
and
great.
Long story short, it's the one thing that kind of stuck. And the best part about it is I don't work weekends if I don't want to. I love all my clients. I'm really lucky. I don't have any terrible realtors that I have to fire, although I fire one a year or if I have to.
Yeah.
But I really have found that the real estate photography and rolling over into design photography, interiors photography, architectural, and I use that lightly because that's its own genre.
Yeah.
But the real estate has gone really well. And I now specialize in twilight photography for real estate. I do lighting. I use lighting. So I do kind of high end real estate photography, and it's just been great. So it's been a wonderful wonderful revenue income resource, but it really is just, I love the genre. I love it. It's very challenging. People ask me, well, it's just a house, it's just a kitchen. And I right. said, well, you try and light that kitchen. And right. They don't know what they don't know, as I always say. Yeah. So when people learn, they realize, especially people like you, extremely talented photographers that try it, usually many times have less than desirable results.
Yeah.
And that's when they start seeking out help, and then they get on the long road. So
I think you hit it right on the head, right? Because a lot of people think, well, I don't know, I'm not going to say a lot of people, but I would say, you know, the uninformed part of our masses may lump real estate photography in with architectural photography, like you said, when these are two completely different disciplines, two completely different beasts. Can you just quickly go into what are the differences? Like, what are the main nuances between architectural photography and real estate photography?
There's so many differences, and they're very, very similar in some ways, but very different in other ways. A lot of the differences are the amount of time I'll spend on an architectural shoot, or a let's just call it more design or interiors photography for builders, for designers, for products, for, you know, things like that. I will spend usually about four times the amount of time photographing a design shoot, and then I will also spend four or more times the amount of time editing. So a lot more time is put into it, and the returns on that time are not really equal to the amount of time put in. I'm going to get a better product, but it's not going to be unbelievably better. But I will also choose the special times of day to do really important shoots, design mm-hmm. shoots. Mm-hmm. Whereas real estate, I've had to learn to make it work every single day at any time of day. That's why I use lighting personally. I teach lighting. Mm-hmm. But like today, I have to do a twilight shoot and a big, big house, and it's pouring rain. So I'll let you know how that one turns out, but I've got to make that happen. So I will figure it out. But the two are very different as far as pricing. Pricing is one of the most difficult things to even get into in this type of photography. Much more, for me, much more difficult than weddings or sports, because yeah. those are more cut and dry.
And that's what I want to get into, Rich. So the pricing aspect of it, there's really three main, I mean, I know I'm oversimplifying this, but there's like three main things that are question mark variables in my head on real estate photography. One is, what gear do you shoot with? Like, what do you need a tilt shift lens? Do you need a large format camera, a medium format, or can you do it with your phone or Micro Four Thirds? Secondly is, where do you find these clients? Like you mentioned earlier that realtors, you know, are your clients are realtors. But that was an epiphany moment in my head. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course, realtors. I would think that you'd go to the homeowner and then the homeowner would hire you. But realtors, of course, they're the ones who have all the listings. Right. And then thirdly is pricing. Like you just alluded to, pricing is the scary nugget. Like, what do you choose for? What do you charge for this? And is it based on your time and how much time you've spent doing this? Is it by the hour? Is it by the house? Is it by the number of rooms? Is it square footage? All of these questions. So let's start with the first one, the gear question. When you go out, what do you shoot with? And what do you recommend people that you teach in your workshops that they shoot with when they attempt this kind of photography?
Well, you made some really good points there, and it's all really important. And absolutely, the pricing to me is the hardest. That's why I don't do a lot of pricing on my YouTube channel or when I'm teaching. But I do have to do some, so I've tried to come up with some ideas. But as far as gear, this is one thing about this genre, is you don't need high ISO abilities. You don't need fantastic focus. You can get by with my main real estate photography camera for day-to-day real estate is going to be my Sony A6000, which I think I got open box from Best Buy for about $350.
Oh, wow.
It's a crop sensor camera.
Yeah.
And the lens I use, the lens of choice, is a Samyang 12mm. And that is about $275.
That's
why you don't need to have that. Now, this works great because I'm shooting generally nothing higher than ISO 400. and I am manually focusing. That Samyang lens is the same as a Rokinon. It's manually focusing, mm-hmm. but I prefer manually focusing because I want to make sure it's always right. And sometimes when you're auto-focusing, you'll bracket and you'll get a wrong focus. So that won't fly. The other cameras I use, though, for all of my real estate and architectural and design photography is a Nikon D750, and I have a various lenses that I use. I could use anywhere from a 70 to 200 for detail shots. Mm-hmm. But my main bread and butter lens, when I used the zoom lens for my Nikon, was my 16 to 35 f4, which is a nice all-around lens. It's a great lens. I've taken around the world shooting everything with it, and it's great. But now I've kind of gotten into doing tilt-shift lenses. I have a 19 millimeter Nikon and a 24 millimeter Nikon. I can also put those on my crop sensor body with a Metabones speed booster adapter, which negates the crop factor, which is all technical. But bottom line is, for real estate photography, you do not need to have a very expensive camera and lens. You do not need to have a tilt shift lens by any means. I can even do a thing called a fake tilt shift, which you can find a tutorial on my YouTube channel. But they sure help. Tilt shifts are great tools when you learn what they're all about. I recommend, if you're thinking about it, just go rent one. It's well yeah. worth it, because my Nikon was like $3,500, which is pretty expensive for a prime lens. But
so can you tilt shift, just for the folks that don't know what tilt shift lenses are, a tilt shift lens is a lens that you can articulate and adjust the plane on both the focal plane and the lens element plane, and shift them, so tilt like this and shift them like this. So what that allows you to do is to correct for converging lines. So if you take a wide angle lens, like a 16 millimeter, 15 millimeter, or wider 7 millimeter on Micro Four Thirds, and aim it up at a building, those lines are going to converge. Or if you aim it down, they're going to spread out, right? So it's just the way the optics work.
Keystoning effect.
Yeah. Keystoning, right. And with these lenses, you can correct for that. So, which looks weird in a lot of ways, because your brain isn't ready for it. And it looks good, because your brain wants to see straight lines. But these expensive lenses allow you to fix that, right? So I guess the question is, it's great to have one of those lenses if you can afford it or rent it or whatever, but can you replicate that in Photoshop? Like, can you correct for a perspective inside of Photoshop, right?
Yeah, when you do a fake tilt shift, all you have to do, first of all, you have to move back further, because when you correct for the keystoning effect, you're going to crop probably 20-30% off the image. Yep. But all you have to do is put your camera up where you want. Like, an example of when you want a tilt shift is, you've got a beautiful window view of the ocean, but down at head height, at camera level, you can only see the sky. So you want to bring your camera up really high, or wherever you want it, and shifting, you would shift down. I only in this genre, I only really do shifting. I don't tilt. I don't do the miniature effect or infinite focus. I use it strictly to change my perspective. But real simply, it just it has a larger. I'm not going to get into the technicals, because I'm not the right guy for that. Mm-hmm. It just it puts the image on a larger plane, a larger space, and then it can move up and down within that space. And you can have it up here, and instead of tilting down, you just shift down, and it will bring you the same perspective that you want, but you're still going to be able to see up where you were. You can also do reverse tilt shifts in a bathroom. Put your camera down low and you shift up where you don't see yourself in the mirror. There are a lot of tricks,
yeah.
But it is a wonderful tool. It also allows you to change the composition and change the amount of ceiling. Sometimes you put your camera up high, you see half the shot is ceiling, so you can bring that down. It also helps you, because now you have all this room to bounce your lights off the ceiling. We tend to bounce lights. It's very different lighting than.
And I want to talk about that, actually. The whole lighting aspect of all this
It frees up your ability, but it does take a little longer, because you're manually focusing each shot. you're also manually adjusting each shot.
Yeah.
And when I tell people how to speed up their workflow, it really boils down to seconds on top of seconds, anywhere from taking a little less time to bring your photos into Photoshop, 2, 3, 10, 20 seconds less per per set of images is going to save up a lot of time over a year. It's going to save
What's the average time that you spend on shooting a property?
I'm not a fast guy. I have worked it down to right about an hour to an hour and a half to shoot anywhere up to about 3,500, 4,000 square feet. It takes me about, I can really rip through a great, if I shoot really well, I edit faster. That's where it helps a lot of people getting into this. They start and going using lights and doing all this. It's just taking too long. Well, don't look at it that way. Look at it as you're going to get faster, the better you get. It takes me maybe 20 minutes if I'm zooming along and really shooting on the top of my game for real estate. If I'm just doing a normal shoot, it's going to take me about 40 minutes to 50 minutes to edit one shoot. And that is full, every shot going into Photoshop, masking, blending layers. So it takes time. Architectural, though, will take, will take sometimes an hour per image, maybe more, because you're consulting, you're dealing with props, you're dealing with the designer, we're doing tethering and looking at stuff and micromanaging things. But it will take me an hour, it will take me 4 or 5 hours to do 5, 6 shots max. And then it will take me 2, 3, 4, 6, 8 hours to edit, depending on the degree of the importance of the shoot or the degree of difficulty.
Yeah, and by the way, while you're talking, I'm showing some of your images over on richbaum.com, and we'll link to those in the description for this YouTube video, as well as the blog post on thisweekinphoto.com.
And one thing about the tilt shift, though, is once you start identifying the look of a tilt shift, you'll realize the majority of photographers use tilt shifts in the upper-end photography. It's just the look you can see and then go, that was a tilt shift. You just know it.
It's one of those things that separates the, oh, that's somebody that just took a snapshot to, you know, between, it separates the professionals from the amateurs or people that don't necessarily know their way around this type of photography, right?
You don't know, you don't know what you don't know, and I wouldn't suggest buying one. I'd rent one until you really realize why you need a tilt shift, because it's pretty expensive.
No, absolutely. So the other question on my list here to run by you was clients, and I actually added another one while we were talking. I want to go into lighting a little bit, but clients themselves. So how do you get in this particular genre of photography? How do you get clients? Like, do you just go to real estate agents and go knock on doors? Do you get a list from your area and blast emails out and say, hey, I'm available? Yeah. How do you get people to hire you to do this kind of photography?
I was hoping you could tell me.
You do This Week in Photo and tell them.
Really, really. I got to just say, though, it's when people ask me, you know, what is the pricing? What is this? What is that? It's really hard for me to answer, because every market differs. It depends where you live. It's just so many things. It depends upon how good is your photography. It depends upon what you offer. You can go when you're starting out, though, the best thing to do is you got to get a resume. You've got to get a portfolio. So you can't get a portfolio until you have experience, and you can't get experience until you have a portfolio. It's one of those catch-22s. But what I'd suggest is just go start shooting. You have a friend that's got a beautiful house. Ask him if you can come in and photograph their living room. You're going to get a product. You're not going to get money, but you're going to get a product, and you're going to get experience. Mm-hmm. Then you go over and you see a housing development, new housing development coming up down your street. Go in there, just knock on a door with a business card or a little 4x5 card and say, hey, I am a local photographer and I want to shoot your house and offer to shoot it for free. Now, a lot of people are down on shooting for free. I personally am not. I think it's a great way to get experience, great way to get your word out there. One thing that's really tough, though, is if you meet an agent, go, listen, I'll do you a free shoot, or I'll do you a shoot at this price to instigate it. It's really difficult. It can be very difficult to raise your prices when you've got your client. Sure. Now they want 20 apartment complexes shot. It's very difficult to raise your price. So you've got to really think about that. It's going to take you some time, you know. You can also call up all kinds of real estate associations. You can become a member of a real estate association. You can opt in for, I've done speaking engagements for real estate. I've done it for design associations, for new home building associations. Personally, I have gotten very, very little return on my investment in the time and effort it took to go do a presentation. But I know this works great for other people. So I'm not saying in any way not to do it. Just be aware that it may not be the answer, but it may be one answer for you. You can contact, there's magazines like Luxury Home Magazine, which is based here in Sacramento, El Dorado Hills. I met them years ago, and they liked my work, and they wanted better work from their photographers because everybody was doing really terrible HDR, which is a common issue in, the clown pictures, the Kincaid
the oversaturated look, right?
Overdone. We call it overbaked or overcooked, but it's just, the important part about this whole thing is you've got to do proper colors. That's another reason why real estate is different than architectural or design. Design, you have to have the color palette exactly. You can't have any color pollution from your natural light sources. You have to overpower and you have to take care of all of that. Real estate, you can get by with a little less because it's a little lower end. So it's just, it's really just to get creative. You can get online. I would recommend if you're contacted by a business that wants to hire you, you go to the website, see are they used to professional photography. You can always tell that. And then you may want to bid a little higher. If they're not, if they're a mom and pop shop, do it less. Is this something that interests you? Do you really want to photograph it? You may want to put that into your pricing. So, it's really difficult for as far as getting clients, but there's just zillions of ways to do it. And get out there, get gregarious, out there, say, hey, I'm Rich Baum. I'm new. I want to start photographing real estate and architecture. I want to do your home. You might get in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Or drive down the street, you'll see for sale signs. Call up the agent. Cold call them. See, they may not, maybe one out of every 20 people might give you a job.
So. Yeah. And if you like in the beginning, just like anything else, like just shooting models, for example, you do it for free to build
model
up your
mayhem.
Model Mayhem or One Model Place or any of these places or agencies. Yeah. You work with models to build up your portfolio. No one needs to know that no money exchanged hands. You have a list of people that wanted your work, right? And yeah, probably the same for real estate photography, right? What about aerial stuff?
Make sure that all your verticals are straight. Make sure you've learned a little bit about the rules.
Yeah.
Unlike wedding and like almost any other genre, there are more rules to this type of photography than any other. There's much less room for creative interpretation. It's really cut and dry. It ain't like a wedding where I will shoot one this way, and one this way. It's always straight on.
I hear you. It's less if there's a sliding scale with just, get it's photo documentation versus artistic interpretation. You're going to skew to this side, right? Where it's more photo documentation. So what about aerial? So I've got a drone back here behind me. I don't know if you can see it back there, but are you getting into that genre at all where you're doing aerials of these properties?
Well, I was in the aerials for years. I started 6 years ago with a P1 Phantom 1 and by DJI. And I used to shoot my own aerials, but now I don't shoot my own aerials. I usually sub it out just because I don't want the liability of the hassle. But I suggest if you want to do it, there is a definite income source, and a drone is a great return on investment because they're literally now the new Mavic Air is I think $700, and the Mavic Pro is coming out, they say, with a 1-inch sensor, which is going to probably be about $1,000.
Yeah.
So they're great, really great tools. You do have to have a operator certificate, 107. I don't know if it's called a certificate or an exemption now, but it's very easy to get.
Yeah,
I think
it's online, right?
Test.
Yeah, it's all online. You can get the whole thing online,
you
right?
You can learn online, but I think you've got to go down to testing centers.
You're talking about, so I think what I'm getting confused with is if it's just an operator's license and you're just a hobbyist, you can register it and fly wherever you want. But if you want to charge money, then you got to do what you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I am by no means advocating any part of drones. I would say if you do it, though, take it with reverence, because I've had a few flyaways over the years.
And, oh, really?
And they're not, wow. They're not perfect. Yeah. And it can be a very, you know, very tricky. So just don't go out there and fly one. If you're going to do, if you're going to charge any money at all, be sure that you go get
you
your
know what you're doing.
7. And it's just the right thing to do.
I would be worried, honestly, looking at some of those photos that were on your website, flying over these million-dollar homes or multi-million-dollar homes yep. with my $1,000 drone and crashing into their house that they're trying to sell, right? I mean, yeah, you'd have liability insurance, but if you're someone's trying to sell this house and you damage it because you're the... It's not a good scene. Not a good scene.
But really important, just remember too, that your regular liability insurance probably more than likely will not cover your drone. And it's something that there are different formulas on. You can do it per flight, per whatever, but you really got to take that. I don't want to get into drones, but you really just do it. Be smart. And that's why I hire somebody out, because I just don't want to deal with it for there. But I do use a thing called a painter's pole, a 16-foot pole. So I get elevated photography, which helps in many situations and is actually the right tool for the job for me in many situations.
Love it. Okay, so the last question that I want to ask you is about lighting. I mentioned that before, and that's the you know, how do you light these things? I mean, yeah, obviously you're lighting a giant building. You're not going to go out at night, I would assume, maybe twilight. You're a twilight photographer, right? So can you take me through that process? Because I know a lot of, I speak to some real estate photographers and they do the whole painting with light thing where they're popping a flash on the individual bushes and then they'll light the interior to get that nice glow through the windows. And then they'll do another exposure for the exterior and then bring all these into Photoshop and meticulously blend them in together, not HDR, but manually masking and bringing in different elements. So what's your process?
Well, I've got into teaching lighting and real estate photography in general, but I really emphasize lighting. And the main thing with lighting is I used to do HDR. I used to actually with your buddy Tim Engel, we did HDR workshops and we're teaching people not real estate but just more fine art. And I started doing the real estate and I started doing the HDR with Photomatics, but I found that I couldn't control the lights and it was too hard for me to try and fix colors and fix things. Mm-hmm. HDR is very difficult to do really, really well. So there are only a few people I know that really do it in a great, great way. Mm-hmm. So I learned to use lighting, and the bottom line is you basically want to overpower your ambient. So you are controlling the light. You want to be in control of everything. But the way I tend to teach it is I have ambient exposures. I'll do a bracket of ambient. So I have the ambient I want to use. I will do a flash image or two to give it the sharpness, the crispness. It's what I want. And then I might do a thing called a window pull, or something we do is called window pull in darken mode. And I have YouTube videos for all of these. And I have a great following. I've got over 10,000 subscribers now. And people, it's a very specific genre, but these people are extremely passionate. And everybody is grasping at how to learn this stuff. So we take lights, and now we've gotten away from single speed lights. We're kind of all moving into the larger lights from the company Godox, which is actually the same as Flashpoint, which is the same as Cheetah, Niwer. They're all Chinese lights that are rebranded, but I use Flashpoint from Adorama. Mm-hmm. I use the speed lights. You don't need TTL. We don't do TTL in this, so that's one nice thing. Yeah. But you can use what you have. But we do all off-camera lighting, and I generally use a speed light. I will use an AD200 or an Evolve 200, which is 200 watt seconds, and it's about this big, all self-contained too. Wow. All the wireless is interlaced in the light. So it's all together. It's really great. We don't need to plug in anymore. We don't need external triggers or external receivers.
Oh,
so I use
killer.
A 200, I use a 300 and 360, or I use a 600. I have like two or three of each of these, and it depends what I need. Most of the time, all we're doing, we don't use modification. We're generally pointing it straight up off the ceiling. Then I am using all these images to bring it into Lightroom to fix as I want, and then bring them into Photoshop to mask in the attributes of each shot. I will use the flash shot and then mask in the attributes of the ambient to bring back the shadows, bring back the life back into the photo, which might look too flashy. this actually helps me because it is much faster than if I was just using lighting in camera to get it all right. The ambient, being able to do this Photoshop work really helps. And as far as doing twilights, all my twilights are really, almost all my twilights are all ambient single exposures with the sky replacement. Once you learn to do a sky replacement, you don't have to worry about the sky not looking perfect for your shoot. You just put in a sky. Then I also, there is what you could do is the light painting, as you had mentioned. A lot of people do the, it's been associated with the Mike Kelly effect, which he's a great photographer doing pops of light. You can do up to 30, 60, 100, 100 layers.
I love
each
that.
Layer you're going to mask in. So as you could see, it gets quite time consuming.
Yeah.
But using the lights as opposed to just masking an ambient will give a better look, but it takes much more time and expertise to do. So I found it better in my life. I used to do light painting, but it just didn't make a big enough difference for me.
Yeah.
So I just do it all
depends on what the individual photographer is comfortable doing and what they want to do. And
what
that.
The client, what the project dictates.
And what the project dictates, yeah. And I'm pulling up your YouTube site, your YouTube channel right now. Tell me a little bit about this. What's on your YouTube channel, and what can people expect if they go over there? And by the way, I just went and Googled Rich Baum YouTube, and boom, it came up as the first result.
Yeah. Well, I love teaching. I love telling people and showing them how to do things and making their life better. That was really the bottom of the line when I started getting emails from around the world, people telling me, the darkened mode, it changed my life. And I take that with a grain of salt, but they literally said it cut hours off of my workflow, shooting and editing, and it gave me more time. My tagline is always shoot better, shoot faster, get more money, and spend more time with your family. Do what you want to do. So my YouTube channel started out about 2 years ago, and I started just doing like screen captures and showing people editing tips. And then I started going into actually going out and doing a little bit of filming on location, which is hard for me because I haven't gotten into having a specific cameraman with me, but I will be doing that later on in this year. So the YouTube channel just started. It took off, got legs, and I've just got hundreds and hundreds of people that really go through all the videos. And I think I've found a really good way of just explaining things in a really fundamentally and rudimentary way that people can grasp and connect and really work, because there are a zillion YouTube videos out there for everything you want to learn, but you can't, and sometimes it's hard to learn from them. So I pride myself on having feedback from people that it really helped them, and it's able to use it in the day-to-day world of whatever you're doing. So that worked really well. And that turned into workshop series that I'm doing. And I hope we'll have information on that in the show notes. But I do 2-day real estate photography workshops, hands-on, which is all based around my YouTube channel. By the way, the YouTube channel is free. I do this as a gift. I love doing it, and it helped me launch my other platforms.
Sure.
So I've got the workshops. I'm doing Auburn next week, Auburn, California next week. I'll be in Seattle on the 9th, 10th, and 12th and 13th of April. And I will be doing Dallas on the 7th and 8th of May. So that's my workshop tour, and it's going along great. And people are just getting back to me just with such great feedback, you know, going, you really helped me in my business, is showing it, and it really transfers into working really well for people. So
now, are the workshops designed to be a one-stop shop? I go in as a photographer, you know, so I'm assuming you assume a certain level of photography knowledge, right? So I go in as a photographer, and then I emerge at the other end of the Rich Baum tunnel as I'm ready to start charging for real estate photography. It's not that.
Disclaimer. Okay. Most of the people that come to the workshops are not top photographers, because they will maybe go to another workshop. My workshops are geared for people, but not geared for people that are just starting. Hopefully they've had a little bit of experience with real estate, they've done HDR, and that they've had a little bit of experience with the lighting. I require everyone to have at least one off-camera light and know how it works and to use it. I then take you by the hand, and I will help you. And my workshops are limited to 10 people, so they're very small and intimate. 2 days of shooting and editing, And I will show you what to do with those lights and how to edit them with the lights. But then you go off on your own. But it really is a great kick in the rear to get you going and committing to using lights and really committing to this whole thing. And the feedback has just been tremendous, and people are just doing really well off the workshops.
I love that. I love that. And the last thing I enjoy more. The last thing I want to talk about is you have a podcast as well, right? Yeah. So welcome to the podcasting world.
I'm not giving you a run for no, not at all.
hey, there's room in the water for everyone. It's a big pool, so come on. So tell me about the podcast. What do you cover? Is it similar to the YouTube channel, or do you go in a different direction there?
Well, it's all real estate. Although, no, it's not real estate. It's called Shooting Spaces, a Real Estate Photography Podcast. But that second part might change eventually to architectural. But it's just Shooting Spaces. And we came up with that with a guy in New York. His name's Brian Berkowitz. And Brian's a photographer. He's a really top photographer in the he lives in Long Island, but he shoots in Manhattan. And he contacted me to be an interviewee, and we started talking, and we decided, hey, let's do an East Coast, West Coast podcast for real estate photography. And the great thing is there used to be a real estate photography podcast for years that went down a few years ago, so there was no options for anybody to do. We like to listen to it while we're either shooting or driving to and from a shoot. Right. So it is a really great opportunity, and we talk about tips and tricks. We talk about we interview the best in the business. We've had people that are the top in search engine SEO, search engine optimization. We've interviewed the top of the photographers. We've interviewed Larry Lorman, who started photography for real estate. And we're doing just great ideas of people that are really influential in helping people to see things differently. And it is all somewhat related, though, to shooting buildings, shooting interiors, real estate, or architecture. So we've got about 9, I think, podcasts out there. We're doing some. We even have a feature where you can record a question on our website, shootingspacespodcast.com. And you can go there, record your question, and we will answer it on the air. So really, really excited about that whole podcasting thing. And it may go on to an online store, and we don't know where it's going, but it sure is fun. And it is really wonderful because we love helping people.
Yeah, I have the page up right now for Shooting Spaces, and looks like you got about 10 episodes in there, and
we released one today. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know you've got a lot of 5-star reviews going on in there. So yeah, congratulations, man. That's fantastic. Yeah. Are those all you're reviewing?
We're not above bribery.
Okay. There you go. Well, cool, man. So we covered a lot in this interview. We talked to, I think, you know, if anyone was interested in sort of whetting their appetite with this kind of photography, I think this interview at least it pointed you in the right direction and kind of dispelled some rumors about how you shoot it, what you shoot, pricing, finding clients, the gear, all that stuff. And there's other resources that you provide for people to go to continue their knowledge, right? So you've got free
Facebook
resources,
groups, just
Facebook
just
group. You've got a Google, you've got a podcast.
Facebook search real estate photography.
Yeah. Right. You've got a podcast. You've got the YouTube channel. You've got all this stuff for people to kind of jump in with both feet and learn more. And if they want to take it to the next level and interact with you, they can just sign up for one of your workshops and go directly to the source and tap into your brain directly. So if people were to go to one place after this interview and, you know, to continue learning more from you, where would you suggest they go?
I always tell people the best resource that's been around the longest is called the photographyforrealestate.net blog from Larry Lorman. And that's been around forever. Just a tremendous resource. The other one would be the Flickr group, where you can post your photos or just look at people's photos, because every photo has to have a description of lighting and any other pertinent information. So PFRE or Photography for Real Estate on Flickr or the blog. And then Facebook, just put in real estate photography and you will find, I have several groups. One's real estate photography with lights, twilight photography for real estate, straight out of camera for real estate. There's just another group for real estate photography. So a ton of great stuff.
Where should they go to for first step? If they're going to watch this and they're done and they just want to continue to take the next step with you, where should they go?
go to just, you could, easiest is way is to Google Rich Baum. You can find tons of stuff there now, but you could put Rich Baum YouTube and find my YouTube channel. And then you can also go into Facebook and type in real estate photography and join one of the groups or many groups. And again, photographyforrealestate.net, the blog for Larry with Larry just has tons of stuff. And they've got that Flickr group too. So it's just so many great opportunities nowadays, where in the old days there wasn't.
Yeah. Rich Baum, thank you so much for taking the time on this rainy Sacramento morning to chat with us and fill our minds with real estate dreams. And have a great day, man. Thanks a lot.
I thank you so much, Frederick. And I look forward to your future podcast, because they always inspire me, and I'm just pleased. Thank you so much for having me
on
your show.
You're welcome. Take care, man.
Bye.
This is TWIP.